What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host. I am your pal. I'm the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can follow me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And hey, if you're in a car and you got your smart device, you can ask that to play podcast Locked On Vikings, and you can get to the show without even taking your eyes off the road, which is very important. That's just play podcast Locked On Vikings. We're also doing a little survey here at Locked On about all our shows, but we want to know what you guys think. We want to hear your thoughts. There is a survey at lockedonpodcasts.com/survey. And if you fill it out, you get entered for a chance to win a $250 Vivid Seats gift card. That is basically a pretty good ticket to a football game. That's lockedonpodcasts.com/survey to participate. Try to win that gift card, but more importantly, we just want to know your feedback. Let us know your thoughts. Go check that out. Moving on, today we are going to talk more about offensive line. I know that we talk a lot about offensive line on this podcast, but it is going to be the offseason of offensive line. It is by far the most dire need for the Vikings. Maybe not the most important position group, but the one that the Vikings are by far the worst at. And we've kind of spent a lot of time talking about offensive line and how the Vikings unit did, both in the pass and the run, and what it means to change positions in the offensive line. And we've done a lot of priming, and really we're just setting up for what the Vikings are going to do at the offensive line. So today, we're going to talk about some free agents and some actual names that the Vikings could go after that would like actually help the team or maybe not. And we're going to look at those players, but we don't want to fall victim to, you know, the grass is greener and stuff. So we're going to, you know, compare them to the sort of offensive line play that we've seen. We're going to try to be as objective as possible and see, all right, who do we actually want here? But before that, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the league-wide news. There were a couple of signings within like 2 hours of each other on Monday with Eric Reed and Kareem Hunt. Eric Reed signed an extension with the Panthers. Kareem Hunt signed with the Browns, whose GM is John Dorsey, the guy who drafted him. So that all kind of makes sense, but there's two kind of sticky situations that really got updated. And I think it warrants a little bit of discussion, right? Because like with Eric Reed and Kareem Hunt, I think everyone is probably bothered by at least one of those guys, right? I personally am not bothered at all by Eric Reed. I think that people with a platform should use that platform to do what they think is right. And if you disagree, that's fine. I get it, and that's not really what we're here to litigate. The point is that Eric Reed comes with a little bit of a PR backlash because there are a lot of people who think that. So if you're thinking from, you know, the perspective of like the Carolina Panthers as an organization, they're willing to take that blowback to sign a player that played very well, that they think is good and worth it. And on the other hand, you have Kareem Hunt, who did something that I think most everybody agrees is bad, and they are also accepting that PR blowback to sign a player that they think is good. And at their core, both signings kind of embody that logic. Hey, you know, we know a lot of people don't like this guy, and a lot of our fans are going to be mad at us for extending or signing this guy, but we don't care. He's good, and we're going to go with him. And I think the difference is that one issue has two sides to it, and one really doesn't, right? Like, Eric Reed's protest of police brutality and, you know, racial injustice and the Kaepernick thing, there are two sides to that issue, right? There are people who really think that they shouldn't have been doing that, and people who support it wholeheartedly. And assuming you care about the money of both of those groups equally, which they probably do, either way, you're going to end up kind of alienating one of those groups. Where with Kareem Hunt's off-field issue, there really isn't two sides to that, right? There's nobody out there saying, actually, domestic violence is okay, or it's okay to hit women or anything. Maybe there are people trying to make excuses by, you know, talking about, oh, we don't know the context or anything like that, but by and large, most people understand that, hey, whatever it was, whatever that situation was, he reacted wrongly to it, and he himself, in his statement, does not dispute that, right? He's not sitting there saying, actually, what I did was okay. I think everybody agrees that what he did was not okay. And it's a matter of when is it okay to give somebody a second chance? And I think that's a problem we're dealing with as a culture. This isn't that kind of podcast. But I think what is worth talking about is, as fans of football, how do we deal with a situation like that? You know, it's one thing with Eric Reed. If you don't agree with what Eric Reed did and the Panthers sign him anyways, you can say, all right, well, at least they just hold a different view than me. And that's just a view that some people hold. I don't hold it. We can all just get over that and be football fans. But with Kareem Hunt's thing, it's like really hard to watch. It's going to be hard to watch the Browns and watch, you know, Kareem Hunt rip off a 60-yard touchdown and get excited about it, because in the back of your mind, you're going to be like, but he did that horrible thing. And am I really cheering for this guy? You know, I had Tyreek Hill on my fantasy team this year, and every time Tyreek Hill would score, my thoughts would be twofold. One would be, oh my goodness, he hit a pregnant person, and the other would be, hey, great, I got fantasy points. And it's really weird that, like, one thing that's so trivial would be in my brain at the exact same time as something that is not trivial at all. And it's really hard to reconcile, which is why I think it's worth talking about. And I think as football fans, we just have to be okay with this kind of thing happening, lest we give up on football altogether. And honestly, if that's what you want to do because issues like this bother you so much, more power to you. Go do it and be happier than you would have been otherwise. But for me personally, what draws me to the NFL and football in general is what happens on the field. And I think so long as we're aware of what these players have done and aware of whether or not we approve of that, you know, we can be excited by a Kyle Rudolph touchdown and then also be like, and hey, he's a great dude and that's awesome. And we can also be excited by a Kareem Hunt touchdown, and we can appreciate that what happened on that football field was cool and fun to watch while also acknowledging and just having respect for the fact that what he did was wrong. And then I think the second chance element comes in after that. The NFL provides chances to people that, let's be honest, would have never had a second chance if it weren't for their football playing ability. And that might not be the way to litigate these things, right? That might not be the spectrum on which we want to judge actions like this. But if there's somebody out there that does something bad and would have had their life completely spiral into doing way more bad things, but that doesn't happen to them because instead they focused on football and they managed to turn into a better person, I say that makes the world a better place. And while that may feel like amnesty for something that we have trouble really reconciling, I also don't think that that has to stop us from enjoying the sport that we have all so passionately fell in love with, that I am making a podcast and you are listening to a podcast in February. It's okay to approach these things with nuance, and it's definitely better to approach them with nuance than it is to forget them entirely come your fantasy draft. So that is going to do it for the news updates and that whole discussion. Let me know what you think, and if you disagree with what I said and really think I shouldn't have said it, please let me know. I would love to talk to you all about this. But we are going to move on. I'm going to go step away to a quick ad break, and when we come back, we will talk about O-line free agents. All right, we are back. So we have one quick item of housekeeping left to take care of before we go on to the O-line free agents, and it's the pain bracket. We're still doing that, everybody. On yesterday's show, we talked about the Blair Walsh wide left kick versus Super Bowl IV. I'm not too surprised to see that Blair Walsh won, and there was a lot of talk of, like, recency bias and stuff about that, and I think that's okay, right? The question isn't which one was worse at the time. The question is which one hurts more to think about, and the fresher wound is going to hurt more to think about. I think I'm okay with that as a result, and it doesn't matter if I'm okay with it or not. It's up to you, the voters. So today, we are going to vote on our one seed, the 1998 NFC Championship, the Gary Anderson miss, the one so bad they made a How I Met Your Mother episode about it, and we're going to put it up against the worst NFL trade of all time, the Herschel Walker trade. This is an interesting one. I think if ever there were an upset, I feel like there's a chance for the Herschel Walker trade to pull it off. I don't think it would happen, but I would definitely understand people voting for it over, like, you know, the worst loss in franchise history, I guess, because it truly impacted the team for, you know, years to come. I mean, they weren't truly contenders again until those Denny Green 90s teams. And you best believe those Denny Green 90s teams would have benefited from a few extra first round picks. So it's interesting, and it's something that I would definitely understand. The Gary Anderson kick is the one seed for a reason, but hey, anything can happen. Go vote in the pain bracket. Moving on, let's talk a little bit about the O-line free agents. So if you haven't been following the show so far, we've been talking a lot about O-line. We've been talking about what we look for, the scheme, the new coaches and everything, what's going to happen, but we haven't really named any names. We've talked mostly in the abstract and money and all that. And the thing about free agency is it has a lot less to do with the quality of the player and a lot more to do with the order that they're signed. Because if you think about it, you know, if you're one of the players or their agents and a guy gets signed for, I don't know, $5 million, you're going to say, okay, sign me for 5.5 because I'm better than him. And do you want a guy that doesn't think that they're better than him? Of course you don't. That's not the attitude you can have in the NFL. So I'm better than him. Sign me for more money. So it's pretty likely that all these guys are kind of going to sign around the same amount, which means unless there's, like, you know, really like different tiers, you know, a guy like Roger Saffold is, of course, going to require more money than a guy like Tom Compton, but so long as they're in the same ballpark, they're gonna get the same deals. That's just kind of how these things tend to go. So we can put the money conversation away for a second and just talk about, all right, which one of these guys do we actually want? And I'm going to go over a list that Andrew Kramer wrote over at the Star Tribune blog, and I'll link it in the show notes. Thank you, Andrew, for doing all this curation. And I'm going to go over them and just talk about these guys as prospects for the Minnesota Vikings, not necessarily their resumes or anything like that, but let's talk about like how they actually played and what they actually offer. If you recall from yesterday when we talked about Rick Dennison and I guess by extension Kubiak, that's going to be a lot more about run blocking and fixing the run blocking, and I do think the run blocking will improve under those guys. But the pass blocking, I'm not sure if they come with the tools to like improve someone's pass blocking. So if you are going to bring in coaches that are focused mainly on fixing the run game, you better bring in players that are focused on fixing the pass blocking. So we're going to focus mostly on that and just make sure nobody's like catastrophically bad at run blocking, because the Vikings have shown that they do care about that. If you remember Cornelius Edison, who played pretty well in the preseason, didn't make the team because of his run blocking, and Brett Jones, who was probably a better pass blocker than Elflein all season, wasn't able to get into the lineup because of problems with run blocking. So they definitely care if it's too bad, but we're going to focus mostly on the pass blocking. So we're going to start with a really popular name at center, and it's Matt Paradis. He played with Kubiak and Dennison in Denver for a while. Those coaches left Denver, but Paradis stayed. He ended up still playing in Denver for the last couple years. He is going to be a free agent and is coming off of a fractured fibula, which might be a complicating factor. However, I think if you feel okay about his rehab and you look at the medicals and there's no huge red flags there, that can actually just kind of be a price lowerer. And that might be really helpful. But we don't just want cheap, right? We want good. Through the 9 games that he played in 2018, he only gave up 5 pressures. Compare that to Elflein's 33 in the 14 games that he played. Elflein's rate was absolutely nuts. But only giving up 5 pressures is excellent. His run blocking grades were still very good. And the grades all kind of support that. He was playing very, very well in 2018. And he has the connection with the coaches. It could be a really nice fit. But as I've talked about a lot online and on this show, there's more years than just last year. So if you go back and look at Paradis' resume throughout his whole career, you'll find a bunch of years with like 17 pressures. And that's a really nice rate. And the grades are really nice. Everything kind of holds up. There's no like hidden red flags that are telling us that, you know, his 2018 performance is lying to us. I think he's just a good center, and he would be a really nice add. Moving on, there's Roger Saffold. He was the name for a long time. However, there was a report that came out that said, you know, LA is really trying to retain him. He plays guard for LA. He had a really high profile showing in the playoffs, which is unusual for a guard, and it's even more unusual for that to be a good thing. But he was really like a road grader in those playoffs. He would be somebody that I think the Vikings would want, especially, you know, since they're so focused on fixing their run blocking. But I'm not going to talk about him too much because it does sound like he's not even going to hit the free agent market, so he won't be an option. So I'm going to move on to Ramon Foster. He's played guard for the Steelers for a number of years, and he has been similarly really sound in pass protection. And really, as you get into this free agent class and even the draft class, as it's kind of coming out and as all of the people who do great draft work are kind of starting to learn about this class, this is really a great year to need guards, and boy, do the Vikings need guards. But Ramon Foster has given up just 26 pressures over the entirety of the 2018 season, and maybe this is important to you, I'm not quite sure what to make of it, but only one of them turned into sacks. A lot of that might be on Ben Roethlisberger, but it's worth mentioning anyways. And if you compare that to the Vikings guards, Remmers and Compton, Remmers gave up 42 pressures, and Compton gave up 34, and neither of them played as many snaps as Ramon Foster. It's very clear that he would be an upgrade over either of these guys. He did struggle a little bit in run blocking. PFF only gave him a 56 grade, but like I said, the coaching is kind of tailored to help out in the run blocking, so I think it would still be a reasonable fit. And thinking about like Le'Veon Bell and James Conner, and even like back in D'Angelo Williams when Ramon Foster was there, I do think he'd also be a scheme fit as well. So he could definitely be somebody that the Vikings target and would be wise to do so. The thing about him is age and just tread on the tires. He has been in the league since 2009. He's been a good guard for that whole time. So it's, you know, difficult to kind of project like an age cliff or anything like that. And I don't think it should deter the Vikings too much, because you would rather have somebody who's good and old than somebody who's bad and young and cheap. So personally, if Ramon Foster was entering 2019 as a starting guard for the Vikings, I would be a huge fan of it. Moving on, Quentin Spain has a kind of similar quality about him where he is a much better pass blocker than a run blocker. But like we've been saying, I think that that's the formula that the Vikings are going to have to be okay with, because they've tailored the coaching to help out the run blocking less than the pass blocking. So you need guys who are naturally good at pass blocking, and Quentin Spain has been good at that his whole career. He had a couple of high-profile, really messy games against New England and Indianapolis, and I think those got a little bit of press in the Tennessee market, but otherwise he's been relatively solid. He only gave up 16 pressures this year, only one of them turned into a sack. Now, he did miss a game, but I think that that's not a huge deal, and he's been in the league since 2015. He's just coming off of his rookie contract. He's going to be 28, so he would be the kind of guy that you can sign to like a five-year deal and just say, all right, position is handled, you're the guy now, which is something that you maybe can't do with somebody older like Ramon Foster, or like when they were going after TJ Lang a couple years ago. It's a lot easier when you can get somebody in their prime and say, all right, you are now our franchise guard. So we do have to step away for our second ad break, and we are going to do so right now. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking O-line free agents until the end of the show. See you all in a minute. All right, we are back. So let's jump right back into it with James Carpenter, who played in 2018 for the New York Jets under Rick Dennison. So there's a connection there. He's another guy who had his 2018 season cut short with an injury, and his 2018 up to that point was going like very okay. He gave up 18 pressures in 10 games. That's not as good of a rate as some of the other guys we've mentioned, but it's still far better than any Viking, so I'd accept it as an improvement. Now, his best years might be behind him. 2017 was definitely a down year for him, and 2015 and 2016 were a lot better, but I wonder if he goes back to that, or if this 2017-2018 version of him is who he is. He's 30, so it's not like there's a lot of development left on him, and he's probably just like a very okay guard. He might be the discount kind of second tier option if you miss out on the Saffolds and the Ramon Foster types. So it would be a reasonable improvement, but not somebody that would get me nearly as excited as some of the other guys that we've mentioned so far. Moving on, Kramer brought up John Miller from the Bills, who's really interesting. He got benched in 2017, where the offensive line coach in Buffalo was Rick Dennison. So it would be kind of surprising to see Rick Dennison like go handpick the guy that he didn't even think could start a couple years ago. But he did come back in 2018 and started 15 games, including a very good one against the Vikings, where he let up a clean sheet and completely shut down, you know, Joseph and Richardson. And looking at the Pro Football Focus data for that 2017 season, it might not have been that warranted of a benching. His run block grade was a 56.8, that's slightly below average, and that's probably why, but he only gave up 3 pressures in 256 snaps. That's really good, and an 82 pass block grade to boot, so we kind of know that that's not lying to us. Everything on that website at least agrees that he was doing pretty well, and that Rick Dennison benching him might have been because of something other than pass blocking. So it could be something that would happen. Again, it would surprise me. I don't think that Rick Dennison is going to go find somebody that he benched earlier, but we've seen teams go back on decisions in the past, like with the Vikings signing Mike Remmers after cutting him a few years prior. There's a really interesting name in New England. Trent Brown was a starter for the 49ers for a long time, got traded to the Patriots, ended up starting there, but the Patriots have Isaiah Wynn, who they drafted last year to probably play tackle, maybe play guard, but Wynn got hurt in the season, and then Trent Brown ended up starting. He plays tackle, and everybody we've mentioned so far up to this point had been interior linemen, which is probably where the Vikings focus more. After all, they currently kind of have like 3 viable tackles in Reef, Remmers, and Brian O'Neill, so it would be surprising if they went out and got another free agent tackle. But I think, considering the state of the offensive line, I think redundancy is an okay thing, and like depth is an okay thing. So going after these high price free agents and having competition for somebody like Riley Reiff, I think that's a good thing, and it'll be worth the kind of redundancy and inefficiency of it. And it's also something that you can kind of work out as years go on, as guys develop, as you figure out and you find somebody in the draft. So I don't think, you know, oh, he plays tackle and we don't need a tackle is really going to be a consideration right now, at least not this offseason. He gave up 39 pressures over all 19 games that he played this season, which for comparison, a guy, Brian O'Neill, that we all have a pretty high opinion of, gave up 31 pressures in 14 games. So Trent Brown was on a better pace than anybody playing in a Vikings uniform this year, and would definitely like mark an improvement. And I think the way it would really look is they would get Trent Brown, they would cut Riley Reiff, they would eat that dead cap for a year, and then have Trent Brown, who I believe he's like 26, would then be the left tackle of the future, and they'd probably sign him to the deal that they had slated for Riley Reiff, who was kind of signed in 2017 as, all right, you're in the prime of your career, you're going to be our guy for 5 years, and if they decide that Trent Brown is an upgrade, which, considering 2018, is probably true, and the rest of their careers don't tell us too much different, however, Trent Brown did have some injury issues in San Francisco, but if you're okay with injuries from 2 years ago, he's probably just an improvement over the long-term contract. He'd eat a little dead cap to make it happen, and that would be that. However, other teams would be vying for him as well that might be in a better cap position, so it would be a really hard trick to pull off. It would also allow you to keep Brian O'Neill on the right side, which I think is something, you know, if you go back and listen to our position switching episode, that's something we didn't really touch on, is switching sides. But, you know, switching that footwork is very difficult, and while Brian O'Neill played left tackle in college, so it would probably be all right, that's still something that he, like, you know, hasn't touched now in a year and like, another whole offseason, so it would be a cost to consider. But if you are okay with doing that, you can look for a guy by the name of Jordan Mills, who plays for Buffalo, played with Rick Dennison there in 2017 as well. In 2018, from a pressure standpoint, he basically put up the same season as Brian O'Neill. So he would essentially, if you would be okay with the scenario of duplicating Brian O'Neill and having Brian O'Neill at both left tackle and right tackle, that would probably be the scenario. And considering his talent level and some tumultuous seasons earlier in his career, he probably comes as a cheaper option than a guy like Trent Brown. So if you wanted to go the route of, all right, we paid everybody else, you know, we did everything else, this is just what we have to do at the tackle position, and we're going to bring in this guy, probably like push Riley Reiff, I guess, at the position and come at a much lower rate. But he wouldn't offer that much of an improvement in my position, just kind of familiarity and another warm body. In Washington, there's Ty Nekshi, who really got his, he caught my attention at first when Washington lost Trent Williams for a little while, and Ty Nekshi came in and actually played very well, and then they lost him, and then they had to start TJ Clemmings, and it was a disaster. I think that was last year, 2017. But Ty Nekshi is a guy that could actually really be an asset to a team. He's played in front of Kirk Cousins before, so that familiarity, I'm not sure how much the chemistry between the left tackle and the quarterback matters, like, compared to the chemistry between, like, the quarterback in the center or the left tackle and the rest of the line, but he would be another one of those, like, 33-year-old veteran, has a lot of, like, decent relief play under his belt. He's been very solid when he's been asked to play, but because he's been behind, like, Trent Williams and a bunch of good tackles, he hasn't actually been asked to play that often. So even though he's 33, he might be a lot fresher than that would usually entail. I kind of think of, like, a Tom Johnson situation where he, you know, is a lot older than he should be as a defensive tackle, you know, for how he's been playing, but because a lot of his experience, like, wasn't in the NFL or was as a backup, you know, he has a lot less tread on the tires, as it were. He could be a really interesting option, and also because of all that time as a backup, he's not going to come with that big, hefty price tag that you would see from, like, a Trent Brown. So he could actually come in and replace Riley Reiff and actually make that financially viable. It could be a very, like, secretly good move. So that's Ty Nesecki. I think I was pronouncing his name earlier wrong. Ty Nesecki for the Washington Redskins. And the last guy we're going to talk about, who was brought up on Andrew Kramer's list, please go follow along, give him a click, he deserves it, is Ty Sambrello. He was actually drafted by Denver in 2015 when Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison were all there, so they definitely have an opinion on him. And he's been, unfortunately, a much better run blocker than a pass blocker. He's not really been able to stay on the field. He's been mostly a depth backup guy, and that would be what he is, you know, if the Vikings do pick him up. He'd be like a Rashad Hill replacement, or maybe even like an Aviant Collins replacement if, you know, they don't trust his health. I'm not sure if he really fills what the Vikings need, but I'm not sure also, you know, if the Vikings are, like, thinking the same way that I am, right? Like, I'm looking at these guys critically and saying, oh, you know, he doesn't do anything for the pass blocking. I'm not sure the Vikings share that opinion, otherwise they might not have hired him. So this would be one of those times where what I think should happen and what the Vikings think should happen could diverge. They could just go get guys that Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison say, hey, we work with this guy, he's a great kid, and here's a depth guy for you. It wouldn't excite me very much, but at the same time, you do need to fill out the room with warm bodies. They might not choose to retain Rashad Hill or retain, like, Aviant Collins or those guys, and you do need people to play backup in case the main guys get hurt. So that is everybody on Andrew Kramer's list. If there's anybody that he didn't touch on and therefore I didn't touch on that you want me to talk about, let me know. We can keep talking about free agent names. essentially what I'm gearing up to, and I teased it in yesterday's show as well, is an all O-line offseason. It would be just kind of a fun, you know, fan speak mock type exercise where we say, okay, let's cut everybody on the offensive line and see what that saves us and see what we can do and see what kind of, you know, unit we can build from scratch. So that is the kind of thing that I'm like setting up for, and I'm going to point to all of these episodes when I do that as like reference points to talk about those guys so that I don't have to like go in depth into each opinion and I can cover things in a more big picture perspective. So that is going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Vikings. Thank you all so much for watching. Go do the survey at lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Ask your smart device in your car to play podcast Locked On Vikings. It works. It's really cool. Go vote in the pain bracket. And I think that's everything, that all the homework that I have for you, my lovely listeners who I love very much. Thank you all again for listening. I will see you all tomorrow. Skull.